everybody. God, I feel dehydrated, nervous. Thank you all for coming tonight to a place you all surely knew would be really hot. But the occasion is special. Not only do we have two terrific poets, but this is the last reading of our 2009-10 Wednesday Night Reading Series season, and my last reading as your host. Next season, Joanna Furman will be curating. And I don't want to be too ceremonious about it, but I just want to say that it has been one of the true joys of the directorship. Time-consuming, but a joy to host so many writers I admire and present them to one of the best listening audiences in New York. So thank you very much. Okay, so tonight we're going to begin with Matvey Yankelevich. His first book, Boris by the Sea, is recently out from Octopus. He's also published several chapbooks, including the present work, Palm Press. His translations of Daniil Karm's were collected in Today, I Wrote Nothing, the selected writings of Daniil Karm's Artist Overlook. And that book received praise from TLS, The Guardian, The New York Times, and elsewhere. He recently edited a portfolio of contemporary Russian poetry and poetics from Aufgabe, number 8, fall 09. In New York, he teaches at Hunter College and Columbia University School of the Arts. He lives in Brooklyn, where he edits and designs books for Ugly Duckling Press. And the project has a very close relationship with Ugly Duckling Press, and the Wednesday Night Reading Series has hosted many UDP authors, so tonight I'm really happy to have Matvey himself read. He describes his book, Boris by the Sea, in a Baum blog interview as a bunch of theatrical gestures or writing gestures and little writing events. It's written in a stripped-down language with the tone of fable, where the moral seems to be, I just don't know what the moral is. The creation runs away, doesn't keep us company, or we lose our mode of accessing our creation. It's absurd, with all these Borises, to be lonesome. Consciousness, inner world, meets the resistance of objects, outer world. Problems of one's body moving through the outer one manifest. Boris tries to see what his shoulder blade looks like by trying to pull it around to the front. Language just registers these encounters. One of the most compelling aspects of the book for me is that Yankelevich moves from poem to prose to theater to an idea, a novel without words, assuming different genres, which resonates with a line on page 21, quote, that without a role, a person is as good as dead, end of quote. Language has something to do with creating a role, but again, the moral here is uncertainty, the question, what? And the mystery is retained in the translation between who am I and who is that? Please welcome Matvey to the Poetry Project.
Can you hear me okay? At this volume? That silence at first was a little awkward. I'm really happy to be here for Stacy's last night as the host, though I'm sure we'll be seeing her deft hand in the backstages for a long time, and I hope she's been amazing here. And I'm very happy to be reading with Rob Fitterman. Thank you all for coming. I'll try to make this a cool breeze as much as that's possible. I'm really glad that the Rothenbergs made it out. Thanks for reminding me. They took a cross-country trip to be here. This is called Come Off It. Vinyl is making a comeback. Allegory is in renaissance. Tape culture on the rise, hand in hand with farmers, with gift economies, recycling, dumpster diving, reuse, repurpose. Wine is good for you. The small press will save us. You know whose side you are on. Marginalized aesthetics speak to power. Love is willless abandon. The Mall of America is bigger than Trungpa Rinpoche. Driving kills 9 lives. You only live once. The news is fit to print. Log on and sign off in seconds. Try a little tenderness. See where that gets you. Coupons save money in time. Yogurt and kombucha live on the air. The flame is an upside-down heart. Difficulty is rewarding. The early bird gets worms. A stone in the hand. 2 birds in the bush. At the beginning was the word. It's so easy. Baby steps. Punctuation is extraneous. Sentences make meaning. Words are traces. You can count on me. Cross-dressing is awareness raising. It's your vote that counts. The voice of the people will be heard. Artifice makes art. Simple truth. Life sucks. B vitamins cure a hangover. Line breaks are where it's at. Everybody gets their 15 minutes to glow in the dark. Arrested for sitting in a park. Beauty saves antibacterial foaming at the mouth. Whores are saints. The idea is enough. The thought counts. If we lived here, we'd be home now. Yoko and me live for today. Homo sapien. Shit happens. Reality is an illusion. Stars shine because somebody needs it. So, a secret between my father and myself. Replacement windows make your home a little brighter. Erasure, utopia, Khlebnikov predicted 9/11. The time is now. Just one more spam filter. This is the last one. I'm going to read a few pieces from Boris by the Sea. As Dmitry Prigov said, context is everything. Boris lay in bed sweating. The world was reflected inside him, somewhere inside his skull. And it hurt. It hurt something awful. Boris lay in bed and thought, is it my skull that is hurting, or is it the world around me that has fallen ill? The chair, the soup, the Oakley table, and the ceiling, and the lid from something or other, all of it hurts. Even the Lucite wallpaper groans and creaks from the pain. If you don't look at the world, then your headache will go away, thought Boris. And everything vanished in the room. All the things died, and the dead do not complain. They are no longer in pain. This is called The Crossing. Boris had to have a talk to Ivan, serious. He sat down again, and Ivan stood up again, as if they had been sitting and standing, respectively. Indeed, they had, as usual. On Boris's lap, there was still a page of the novel which he was writing, which had no words. Ivan interpreted this and said, "When you will write the novel, will the novel be a reflection of the real world, or will it be a separate world which you have created?" Boris decided he would play along. He played along and along and a long time after he realized he had a grasp on things, leaving out great portions of the truth, especially with respect to nothing, things with no meaning to them. And he had already developed the following philosophy, that of the world of maximum possibilities. Being doubtful gave him the upper hand. He could answer twice to every question, and he did. Boris began to imagine a world where things were real because we believed in them. And then he told Ivan that this world where reality and solid forms were such because we thought them so, that this was our real world. This made Ivan cross. In effect, Boris was saying that the world that he was writing was an independent world, but was just as real as this real world, which was just as make-believe as the world he was writing, and both were reflections of each other and could not exist in total isolation. That's really all he was saying. But that wasn't all. Boris remembered that he wasn't writing a novel with words. He was writing a novel without words, but he didn't say anything about it to Ivan. He kept it to himself. Boris wasn't sure where he was going. For a moment, he thought that he was in the middle of a sentence. The next minute, he found himself walking down an empty street. Just then he was not trampled barely by a harnessed mare pulling along a crumbling carriage. Suddenly Boris became very old and wise too. But then, as it happens some of the time with old and wise men, Boris fell over dead. At this point, the story comes to a point, and that point is too narrow for the story to pass through. Boris found out from the window long before us what fate is. Fate is nothing, and the thingness around us circles like crows as magpies. If you have never had it, you just won't be able to understand why. It was never as beautiful at the cemetery as when you were dying. Boris had no parents. He appeared. Or maybe he just doesn't remember them. He simply had no faith in the past, and he didn't go there. Boris took the chair apart. He made the parts into a pile. He lit a match. As the parts were wooden, they began to burn. Boris threw the matches in too. They were also wooden and also began to burn. He watched and watched as the parts burned and burned. He was satisfied just to watch. The chair seemed also strangely satisfied, as though it had finally fulfilled its true purpose, and Boris had helped it to do so. And when it was finished, there was a charred black hole in the wooden floor where once a chair had stood, and Boris climbed into the hole. The author. There has never been a time in which I have been convinced from within myself that I am alive. Truly, when I believed in it, everything disappeared. What do people talk about? Asked Boris. It is true, the only categories left are nice and not nice, and these persuade our natures to bend and break and to be good. There was also how it used to be, which was, for the most part, nice. If it happened not to be nice, then it was certainly much better now. Boris had an idea. Then he sat down and wept. It is hard to say what it was that Boris had been thinking about before he stopped thinking about it. He closed the window. Boris was in a diner, only it was the wrong diner. The right diner was aluminum blue. It was heavy inside. It had revolving tables and formica chairs. It had a soft cushioned floor and potted flowers in the porthole windows. But this diner where Boris happened to be was not like that at all. They don't make diners by the sea, at least not the right kind of diner. Boris saw the light. There were many of them, little lights everywhere, making one big blinking bright mess of white. making one big blinking bright mess of white. He found the small shake to be rather filling. When it was over, he had a headache, and yet it was never over. It followed him. It persisted. It straggled. It blurred left and right. Boris followed, making circles. I can see it now. Boris is angry. He is angry that love is not like in the songs, that she can be next to him and nothing can be happening, that he does not dream of her, that love is not crazy. He wanted something sweet, then he wanted something salty. Then he might want something sweet again. He said something. She understood something else. This poem is called Political Speech. There was an explosion. There was an explosion, and some people died in this. Now they're trying to contain the oil spill, which is pretty big. They're trying to surround it and corral it and tow it out there. Then they're going to set fire to it. You know, oil floats on water, so what they're going to try to do is have a controlled burn of this stuff. Now Homeland Security is investigated investigating what happened here, which should inspire lots of confidence that we're going to get to the bottom of it, then the regime is going to have a statement here on the oil spill in the Gulf coming up pretty soon. After the regime speaks on this, we'll have a better idea, because however this happened, accidentally, however it happened, the regime's going to use this for all it's worth. We know this. So it really doesn't matter, Rob, if this was an accident or an act of sabotage. The regime will use the occasion of this event to its own political advantage. You do survive these things. I'm not advocating don't care about it, hitting the shore or coast, and whatever you can do to keep it out of there is fine and dandy, but the ocean will take care of this on its own if it was left alone and was left out there. It's natural. It's as natural as the ocean water is. Well, the turtles may take a hit for a while, but so what? So do we. Hell, remember that barred owl that flew into the windshield of the Wentzville, Missouri fire truck, and they got to the fire and the thing was still hanging on out there? It had a broken wing and they took it to some veterinary sanctuary or hospital or something? Just give it a pain pill. Why not? That's what they had for us, and we don't even launch ourselves into the windshields of fire trucks. Okay. This is the nature poetry of Matvey Yankelevich. Birch, beech, larch, maple, elm, maple, fir, cedar, tamarack, oak, or cedar, cypress, sycamore, spruce, elm, maple, elm, maple, elm, maple, elm, or palm, mel, maple, elm, dogwood, dogwood, plain, elm, maple, willow, willow, or baobab, baobab, birch, hawthorn, nectarine, poplar, rubber, rowan, lilac, chestnut, tea, apple, elm, fig, ginkgo, oak, or birch, beech, peach, rowan, linden, hawthorn, poplar, cedar, pear, or apple, elm, buckeye elm, jade elm, jasmine elm, maple elm, nectarine elm, pine elm, plain elm, sycamore elm. Sycamore, more, more. Sycamore, more, more. Sycamore, more, more. Acacia, acacia, acacia. A preface. Someone whose opinion was emotionally important to me told me that I write one-liners, so I decided that I'd write two-liners, and so I wrote this long poem in couplets. Later, Rob said the couplet is about argument. I said, no, it's not. It's about language and mimesis and abstraction, and the letter as such, also about Dutch painting, sort of, as Barth wrote about it, but not exactly. It's also about classical art, and though it's written in a variously free rhythm, it's not a long American breath, nor is it long-winded in a Russian way. If you hadn't noticed, I'm not that big, not like Olson or Tolstoy. Plus, my dad had asthma. It turns out it was psychosomatic asthma. It's a bummer not to be able to breathe when you are not in a good mood. And he smoked, and I smoke too now, so my breath is short. I can't dive for very long, though somehow my dad did. He dove long. I think it was easier for him with more fat, his belly like a buoy. It seemed easy in the water. Or maybe he breathed water better than he breathed air. In any case, I wrote this long poem against all the art that came before, except that I couldn't have written it without all of it. But it is written in very short lines, and two lines at a time. And this isn't part of it. What follows are two small parts of it. First, the epigraph from my friend and poet, Rob Fitterman. Like a stranger, I come in here meaning to say the world is simple, but cannot. find the words or find it simple. What happens when the world goes on and no one walks around, no one I can remember, hear, or imagine? Composition book. It takes so little to mean a lot. I collect glass, I collect nothing. Throw a handful, catch a mouthful. Tonight's the night, tomorrow's the day. This thought caught between pages, acts staged in scenes, composition book stolen out of store. Let this be a lesson to you and to you too. It's not so easy to do as little as that. Yes to success, love to sirens, no to couplets, repeat gesture, cross that road last before you come to. Threaded darkness, trembling tether, commonplace has its place as much as a map, as much as a book of maps holds a stain as of coffee. Greg says all language is mimetic because, and I consider whether that in itself can be the subject of a poem I write in the morning. There is no such thing as denotation in words, only connotation, except onomatopoeia, such as ring, ring, as in the sound of a phone. And even then, the connotations resound in a headache tomorrow. But I would argue the opposite conclusion from the revelation of opacity or translucence rather than transparency of words blurred, that language does not represent or imitate and therefore not mimetic, and why take my Mises to be more metaphor than it already is after the joke no one gets in WCW's Spring and All? The fall is the only real subject of all the words they try to represent reality approx but fail. A keep trying that may be so intertwined with species survival that it too goes on, perseveres. What I have in common with my odd self, have in common with his body, the way it moved. So it may be said to evolve, yet hardly changes, so that it seems both static and moving on, just as it suggests a movement backward toward the source of the disaster. So poetry that intends to represent the world cannot help but lie about a world. The word struck dumb in twofold desire keeps us down, but carries within it the reversed destiny of undifferentiated space. Eden, an expanded moment, unmarked and undivided, unnoticed, unreal, one without many. How to get there and back? There is one magic word that can untie us, isn't there? The clothes are all inside out. That phrase would be interesting to place. To slow down the word is nearly to add letters to each other. The word poet lies no more than any other. Why slow down if not to resist speed? There are other possible reasons, not all of them resistant, to have an awkward repetition happen on its own. The way words resist each other seems tension enough, plot and action enough. A story cannot be told in words, only in their expression. A voice must tell, and what the story is not at all clear yet at this last point, and at this point, and precisely, pointing is what pointing is, none can now tell. In a childhood game, I played the role of a superhero porcupine. I always liked porcupines and hedgehogs, but if language is arbitrary, why all the seemingly magical connections? Khlebnikov's word as such, freed of habit, of utility, Khrushchev mobilized letters for the battle with meaning, and all sounds the letters made were made connotative, stripping away connections previously binding them to cliches of poetry, such as symbol, image. Khrushchev made a non-objective letter, collages based on primitive woodblocks and grotesque folk laughing at crap on a stick, a word stick, to beat the sun and moon, to throw overboard the potato that kicked it. Useful information was obstructed, couldn't pass through the newly free word to reconstruct a true story of the connections between sound and letter and means, language as incantation, not info. We harbor a hatred for the language that came before us insurmountably, an instant expression, tough to chew, private language, universal speech, and this new tongue, would it then also be shackled to meaning? The sentence speaks volumes, the light changes, shades that mark the time it takes. What have I learned from you, poem? I don't recall. I don't remember anything from last night. I think I was happy, though, down to the basic unit of existence, a wisp of smoke. Two or three wisps. What are my questions? Problem is the days waning before even breakfast, or words that don't come together, coming together being something of a gold standard. You'd feel better if you dressed weller. Thought that it would go away, that you'd go away, that we'd go away together. Again and again, one way to say the same thing is happening more than once. Are we mapping or am I napping is a question with multiple addresses. To touch every one of you codes my desire to make you appreciate a desire and its apparent truth value. Quiet evening at home, potential self-destruction. Have another. Am I taming complexity or entering a glassy phase? The pasta cooks in a unit of time called a cigarette, but a tad overdone, wouldn't you say? So, because I say so. That's what's up. The 10th corporation taps out rhythm for labor. You know what I'm saying. Who's with us? Everyone who's not against us. Everyone who's not hanging from a tree. The corpses of our fathers. That's how it goes. Not how it is, or if I had it, you know I'd give it to you. Something cold in the woods, damp clearings in darkness between the fir trees and the oaks, the aesthetic doesn't stand a chance. I've glued this together to emphasize just how apart I am from what binds us. Sun comes in morning, then clouds brought by wind, we imagine. Whir of motor, sweep of rain, modern alienation clover takes over the plowed under earth. Sharp cut of the sign, the letter's dark stroke. Marinetti vrooms, Mayakovsky booms. George Oppen say, if you see a tree, you must include it, must write tree. I haven't read enough Oppen. I've eaten a lot of bagels and ridden a lot of trees. No thank you, John the bookseller. I don't want to use the antibacterial hand sanitizer. I'm old-fashioned. I'll just wash my hands of it. There's a sunny side of the street, but I'm not on it. I'm on the other side of the street. I have both scarf and hat on. Some people have accomplished today the washing of their automobiles, the trimming of their nails, a good day's work. I'm speeding myself up and slowing myself down, a process by which I remain. Is this floor dirty? Is it dirty enough to be cleaned? Dirty enough to be the ground we walk on? I want to get under it all. Would that be lower than the grass? They promised rain. How can I get some if it doesn't come? The trail is a loop. Nothing can be said about its content except that there were some ducks in the pond. How long can stillness stand? Focus on the arrow's movement forward. What it leaves becomes a path. How the train halts in its tracks. The sleepless play solitaire or stare at black windows. For the arrow, there is only one point. Point of view, a little blue. The early sun breaks the early mist, but nothing counts anymore. You see me as someone else. I see you as a felt lack. To think of imitation as something constant is akin to suggesting by medicine we still mean leeches, a coded style everyone already knows. Mostly the answer to the aesthetic question posed by Prague capitalism is make it better, more real. But what if you forget the bee and the flower altogether? Go like Rimbaud to the desert. Born a Jew, I admit I can't stand the desert's vast emptiness. We're all in awe of its potential to surround. You can go any which way but out. But the lack of stuff, of objects, the desert shakes off the word. A plane of non-existence. We're leaving the world behind. Get ready. Follow the homeless. They march out in front. A mangy dog behind them. And who is that figure in the lead? The piles get higher. Catastrophes cloud. Disasters desert. Welcome to non-objective plateau. Enjoy the lack. Oblivion's prophecy. The mask smiles back at the black square. Its raisiny curves. Illusion unmasked. The road snakes through the piles as the arrow flies, as the crow. Everybody's got to do it. Mimic another. How do you rub your eyes? Enough to see stars, blinding, moving in the dark. Choose chance, my love. Choose chaos. Chances are it's not enough for each moment to happen only once, to paint the water blue but not the canvas. Poetry attempts a trick by which the many possible paths don't narrow into a point as of an arrow. The image of the face, i.e. the so-called visage, what's seen, a mask, therefore, and also what sees not itself, Don't touch it. Do not kiss it. Let it touch my face. Let it see with its lips that I am still warm, green, turning color, turning a leaf, a line, the page of a book, the book. The book I've been all along looking for, a book I am composing toward what must be an end, seen from above, a point, seen from this distance. It resembles something spotted or vein-riddled, patterned, caressed now and then, those hairs on your arms. Are they standing up? I don't know more. I don't know more songs, more devices such as my love, nor devices more epic like beginning and end, whether O or O. The ode to the device is forthcoming, shortly to be available in tiny indie bookstores across the universe. Reviews are already being written. One says, there are many lakes in the desert, as many as mirages. Would this composition book, were I to clutch it to my chest, stop in its tracks, the arrow speeding toward the heart of the matter? I see no other use for it except the strange activity of inching anyway toward the unwanted conclusion while at all costs sidestepping the same. Slow down, world. I won't let you. I won't let you down or not again or not yet. People used to talk and think different. We can be sure by the poetry and artifact of what might be highly formalized, constructed terms for language acts, behaviors, gestures toward the world and the moon above. What do you think, cowpoke, professor of the circular field? These are corn days, after all. A field all to myself to crop, to cut and paste, to strip or stripe. An underlined field protected from the radishes of time, as they say in Moscow. Oh, the light does fade daily. It can't be helped. The top floor fades later. Does it lose the charm to say it straight? My socks have holes around the heels, as do my shoes, where time tickles. You say, that's reward enough. You say something then. Why so quiet, ancestors? Couldn't take the future? No mirror, no lamp to see one's face. Two ways, in thought and laughing, they toggle back and forth. Looking for a face in a crowd, someone to give a damn about, a lace for my boot, torn in two, the football player upside down in the museum, a page missing before it could be part of a book. In the sense of composition, in whatever sense I have left. If there's anywhere left where you can't insert or swipe a credit card, take me and my post-traumatic generation to that slaughter, or is it a sacrifice? Must it be written? The weight crushes the word. The stage stands empty, lies empty, an empty stage. The actor ascends the boards. We've seen it all before, and again before we're through. I hope this time the mask can come off to reveal the audience. House lights, dearest artificial sunlight, lead the way. The play is a flop with a delicate flail. When everyone goes home, I stay to put it all back, though I've lost the century or two easily walking between what we have in common to really speak volumes, to build a home with it, a sticker stuck to the ground, 069 or 690. So ahead can get lighter, but a light gets brighter. Yet there was something I wanted to say, so pause while we reconsider. Is this happening now, or is it a representation of it? You take a moment, and I'll take a moment. Shadow sandwiching veil and premonition casts sidelong glances. To say the sun shines is at best an approximation. It's just the way it is, i.e. bungled, means a lot of nothing, or tomorrow's another day. Count the trees, Videnski wrote, simple things. On the face of it, body displaces water, but what's really happening? Thank you very much.
Thank you, Matvey. Both poets have books on the back table, so please take a look at them. And let's take a 10-minute break. Bathroom's on the second floor. Get some fresh air. Hello, everybody.
So where's the the celebratory after party for you?
I don't know, the 12th Street Pub.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Thank you all for coming back into the warm parish hall. Okay. Thank you to our volunteer box officers tonight, Montve and Rob. It might be the first time that happened. We'll be counting the money very closely. Okay. Rob Friedman is the author of 12 books, including War, the Musical, Notes on Conceptualisms with Vanessa Place, and Rob the Plagiarist. His latest book, Sprawl, Metropolis 30A, is the fourth book and likely the last of his Metropolis series. He teaches writing and poetry at NYU and in the Bard College Milton Avery School of Graduate Studies. Tomorrow, I believe, is the last day of business for Rob's word shop, where individual letters and words can be purchased, and the conversations he's having are being recorded and will be collected in a book form at the end of the month. Rob Friedman really captured my attention when I read an interview with him online at Cold Front Magazine. Ken Walker asked him what his top five favorite films are, and Rob replied with what I think is a Cineplex list of showtimes, with Avatar at number one and with Ninja Assassin at number five. His answer becomes as viable as any sincere list. It taps into the public ethos at a specific moment, much like a list of anyone's favorite films would simply offer a transitory glimpse of one's taste, but the glimpse would be taken as the truth about a person's person, something to form opinions around. This is all to say that the poet Rob Friedman has many strategies, many Robs, to quote, to create poems that look in on the subject from without, rather than gazing out on the world from within, end of quote. And those are words of someone named Morgan Myers, who I don't know. In a piece like A Hemingway Reader, Friedman uses erasure of the novel The Sun Also Rises, leaving only I statements, which, in a mirroring section, provides him access to a version of memoir otherwise impossible. An optimist, Friedman's work proposes a different spin on universality, where contingency and multiplicity are its true nature. Please welcome him to the Poetry Project.
Dear editors, thank you in advance for reading my submission. I have included three poems. By way of introduction, let me say that this submission represents a significant shift in my poetic career. For the past 25 years, I have published significantly in the experimental poetry community. And while it would be an overstatement to say that I am now denouncing that earlier work, it would be accurate to say that my attention has shifted to a more direct communication. I feel that the times requires it. If you are familiar with my earlier books, you will find this new work surprising. Sincerely, Robert Friedman, 1 Washington Square Village, 160, New York, New York, 10012. Okay, oh, I don't like to explain much, so I'll just get started. Can you hear me? In the back? Okay, this is good. Okay, usually if I stand about this distance from the mic, that's pretty good. Okay, everybody can hear? Okay. I think I'm going to have some visual challenges. Is this the usual lighting? Okay, that's all right. Okay, let me turn. If I turn a little bit over here, I think it's a little better. All right, good. I'm going to read. It's much better. Thank you. I'm going to read three things. I'm going to read four things from this book that just came out. Two pieces from the first section, the first part of the first section, the first series, really, and then one piece from the last section, the fourth section, then a couple of short new pieces that are very much in progress. Okay. Oh, I almost forgot. And I have to read this one. Let's see. I have page one here, but I can't find page two. All right. I'm just checking to see if I get this new piece because I think I brought it. I know I meant to bring it. Let me see. Or I could read. I could read this one, which I've never read. Okay. All right. Do we have time for two more short poems? Okay. I'm going to read two things that they're very short. Does anyone have a watch? I meant to bring a watch. I'm not really sure when we started. All right, I'm going to read a long piece from this poem called River Bank. This poem is titled Fez. Fez. It is a dusty morning hour and there is no sound. We stumble onto an outdoor table and folding chairs where we are told the tea will arrive. It is dry, except for the buzz of flies. I can only say what I did not see next. Billboards, dancing iPods, a blue and orange video screen of children splashing down an amusement park water slide, posters of shock about to dunk, pink James Dean from Giant, and a soft serve swirl ice cream machine does not flood the dusty air around me. A man enters with a tray and two small cups. He is not real, and we are not real. We come from a faraway place where our products are known and our methods are famous. The American Poetry Review. Thank you for giving us this opportunity to read your manuscript. After much consideration, we feel unable to use it for publication. We regret that the large volumes of submissions preclude a more personal reply. Beloit Poetry Review. We shall not be using your manuscript. Thank you, however, for giving us the opportunity to consider it. The Yale Review. We want to thank you for your kindness in letting us see your work and regret that we must use this form to let you know that we have not found a place for it in the Yale Review. Poetry. Dear Robert Fitterman, we're not going to be able to use any of these poems, I'm sorry to say. Thank you very much for giving us a chance with your work. I hope you're well. Bess, Chris. Pillbox. Octanelle. Time is a thief. As you age, it may even silently steal our bones. Advar. I had to avoid the park on my way to work. Everdart, I said to my doctor, I have a going problem. You have a growing problem. Crestor, while I was building my friendships, my family, while I was building my life, Flomax. Here's to spending more time on the road. Do you know these people? Can they fly high? Boris tried to remember the words to something, but he was tired. Just because I have a new bag doesn't mean I can't look. Boris's sister went to Circuit City to buy a laptop for her home business, and they sold her a laptop for home use, not for business. She doesn't know much about computers, and she wanted Boris to help her set it up. When Boris saw what they sold her, he was a little bit upset and called them and confronted them with the problem, and they basically said, "That's what she gets." Boris needed some color in his life, and he got a raspberry pink hobo bag. Now we are friends. This opens with an epigraph from Vito Acconci's following piece, 1969. October 4, 9:25 a.m., Christopher Street and Bleecker, southwest corner woman in black coat. She walks east on Christopher, north side of the street. 9:28 a.m., she walks into A&P, Christopher Street and 7th Avenue. 9:55 a.m., she leaves A&P and walks west on Christopher. 10:03 a.m., she enters building 95 Christopher Street. 1. Ben Kessler's. Who is Ben Kessler? I have been an entrepreneur interested in the web and technology since an early age. I have proven experience in many fields of marketing, including branding, advertising, and public relations. Currently, I'm very interested in social media marketing and blogging. I strongly believe that a brand must have complete transparency, an authentic and friendly personality and image to compete in the current marketplace. I'm the co-author and editor of Unbreaded, an online publication that explores the craft of fine sandwiches. My interests and hobbies include reading, writing, culinary arts, green technology, playing and listening to music, watching the Phillies and Eagles, and more. Paxil. I don't enjoy things like I used to. I can't sit still. I wasn't always like this. I used to be happy. I remember being happy. Boris purchased a work shirt here a few years back. After two washing cycles, the shirt had shrunk, either that or Boris had put on a few pounds, but he would like to believe it was the washing. And then the shirt started to, like, disintegrate and unravel. This was a pretty expensive shirt, too, mind you. For Boris, it's that the Burger King Whopper comes with more veggies on them, and he just likes the flavor better. Then there's the fact that Burger King is the one that had that Barry Manilow penned slogan, "Special orders don't upset us, have it your way." Are you tired of being confused with that other Ben Kessler? Are we really all just the same person? Thought I'd start a group and see what we have in common. Which Ben Kessler am I? A music teacher, composer, arranger, mixing engineer, sound designer, and multi-instrumentalist from Saline, Michigan. I graduated with degrees in music education and trombone performance from Lawrence University. I've been in many bands, including the Chill E. Palmer Project, J. Edgar Nation, and the New Green. I worked at Apple for a number of years. Who I'm not. The owner of BenKessler.com, the owner of BenKessler.org, a graphic designer, a football player who gave a controversial speech at St. Thomas University, a singer-songwriter who plays guitar, Kessler on Twitter, a director of media at Princeton. Ben and Rob. Hey, Ben. Are you the same Ben in Philly, Unbreaded? You don't know me, but I'm a writer who teaches at NYU. I'm doing a poetry book where I randomly follow people online and appropriate text along the way. Totally by chance, you're the central character of this project. I hope you will find this interesting and that we can periodically be in touch about it. Hope to hear from you soon, Robert Fitterman. Ben Kessler, June 8, 3:57 p.m. Hey, Rob, I don't know about the Ben in Philly thing, though I do happen to be a big Philadelphia sports fan. I'm not going to be here over the fall, as I will be in New Zealand studying abroad. However, I'd love to see some details on the project. Sounds fascinating. Feel free to ask any questions or whatnot. Ben. Levitra. Sometimes you need a little help staying in the game. But once you're in the zone, it's good. The nature poetry of Matvey Yankelevich. Pine, elm, maple, spruce, elm, maple, elm, maple, elm, maple, elm, maple, elm. Rob Fitterman, June 9, 8:32 a.m. Hi, Ben. Thanks for your reply and your interest in my project. You'll probably find that the friends are not necessarily your friends because I've been mixing up a few Ben Kesslers. In fact, I'm not sure if you're the Ben Kessler who operates the sandwich shop Unbreaded and or the same Ben Kessler who has the website on media studies. Rob. Now we are friends, too. Ben's friends. One, Daniel Burke. Stem cell research and human cloning, Representative Burke votes yay. Property tax exemption for disabled veterans, Representative Burke votes NV absent. Taxes for levee repair, Representative Burke votes yay. Fairground racetrack authority, Representative Burke votes yay. State lottery privatization, Representative Burke votes yay. Support horse racing through riverboat gambling, Representative Burke votes yay. Extending parental health insurance to unmarried, Representative Burke votes NV absent. Agreement among the states to elect the president by national popular vote, Representative Burke votes yay. Allowing teachers to conduct a silent reflection, Representative Burke votes yay. Internet screening in public libraries, Representative Burke votes yay. Truck speed limit increase, Representative Burke votes nay. Boris thought it was like Red Lobster, where you can order from a menu of fresh fish and have it prepared the way you want. Again, he was wrong. I thought she was one of the better female contestants, earthy and different. My stepdad is trying to contact her. They're both from Colorado. Boris very much liked this movie, although it could have been done a little better. Kirsten Dunst is an amazing actor, and Boris doesn't really care if anyone wants to agree with him. Lipitor. I've studied the human heart for a lifetime, and there's something you should know. Hello again. Ben takes fifth and sixth at ACA Crit Series. Ben Kessler has been doing very good in the Tuesday night C races down at the Washington Oval. Last week he won the Chase Group Sprint and placed fifth. Tonight he placed sixth after coming from behind due to a crash. Congrats, Ben. Keep up the good work. Bacon and egg on a roll on Bleecker Street. Village Clubhouse Deli, 164 Bleecker Street. Roll, airy, too large for sandwich. Egg, over hard. Bacon, overwhelms the sandwich, pre-cooked and oily. Price, $2 plus tax. Stars, 1 to 4, 1. Comments, overall disappointing. The bacon is too plentiful and too crispy. Evergreen Deli, 171 Bleecker Street. Roll, too large for sandwich, otherwise average. Egg, excellently cooked, over medium, a slight runniness to the egg. Bacon, pre-cooked and crispy, broken into small pieces. Price, $175 plus tax. Stars, 1 to 4, 2. Comments. A pretty typical sandwich, except that the bacon seems to be of higher quality, even though it was broken into bits and pre-cooked. Bleecker Farm Corp., 272 Bleecker Street. Roll, excellent, soft, and doughy. Eggs, soft scrambled, probably two eggs. Bacon, more chewy, less pre-cooked. Price, $2 plus tax. Stars, 1 to 4, 3. Comments. Service was slow but personalized, as the owner seemed to be the cook as well. There's an excellent balance between the bread, egg, and bacon. Cafe Village Delight, 335 Bleecker Street. Roll, very good, toasted. Egg, scrambled and folded like a small omelet. Bacon, very salty and oily, pre-cooked and broken into small pieces. Price, $3.25 plus tax. Stars, 1 to 4, 2. A very average sandwich because it was pre-cooked and had very oily bacon, but the toasted roll is a plus. Bread and Pastry Cafe, 330 Bleecker Street. Roll, grilled in press. Egg, over-hard, oily from a dirty grill. Bacon, pre-cooked, crispy, smaller pieces, very oily. Price, $2.75, no tax. Stars, 1 to 4, 1. Comments. American cheese or some kind of processed cheese was put on the sandwich without being requested. The pressed roll is an interesting twist, but the preparation is very poor and the grill is not properly cleaned. Note. In the month of March 2006, I sampled and reviewed every bacon and egg sandwich available on Bleecker Street from its entirety, which runs from the Bowery to Hudson Street. There were three stipulations. One, each establishment had to have a Bleecker Street address. Two, my ordering had to be bacon and egg on a roll without any further specification. And three, sandwich had to be available to go. Boris is a stickler for quality, and he can tell you Payless shoes are every bit as good, if not better, than some very expensive shoes that he's bought. He's the kind of shopper that doesn't rely on brand names only. He can judge for himself what's good quality, regardless of the price, and he can buy good quality for a low price. Boris has worn his dress shoes to formal balls, and he has had many compliments. He can tell you these shoes have held up well during the two-step, polka, waltz, cha-cha, and many other dances. He's thrilled to have just bought the kitten heel pumps with the velvet bow and floral lace over satin. Ben Kessler, June 9, 2:12 p.m. I'm actually none of those Bens that you mentioned. If you're interested in a brief background for me, it will go like this. Ben Kessler, undergrad at Tufts University, mechanical engineer major. How did you come up with the idea of this? How did I or us Bens get chosen? Ben. If there's a Cinnabon, Boris usually stops there. Boris went to this movie with what he thought were unrealistic expectations. Working in the hotel industry has afforded Boris the opportunity to recommend dining establishments to visitors, something he takes quite seriously. Viagra. Sure. A lot has changed over the years. Now we are friends, three Ben's friends' friends. Tina Dividak. Hat tricks in House League, report date 6-4-2008, last match results. Sikkim 8, Drunken Whores 6. Drunken Monkeys 8, Cockring Hot Pocket 6. Final match 6-10-2008, Sikkim versus Drunken Monkeys, board 3. Sikkim is home. Most improved players, Sherry Landis, Drunken Monkeys, .85. Victor Donhauser, Sikkim, 0.61. Ed Schnell, Drunken Whores, 0.57. Ed Rebstock, Sikkim, 0.28. Jessica Matthews, Cockring Hot Pocket, 0.17. Melanie Snyder, Drunken Monkeys, 0.14. Zelnorm, is your body telling you there's something wrong, but you're not sure why? The nature poetry of Matvey Yankelevich. Tree, 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 tree. Okay, I'd like to finish with a brief essay. And I just have to thank Stacy once more because this is her last hosting event for some time, wherever she is. There you are. Thank you, Stacy, for 10 years of unbelievable labor. And thanks for coming with all the traffic and terrible weather. I'm glad that you... Failure, a post-conceptual poem, opens with an epigram from Solowit. If the artist changes his mind midway through the execution of the piece, he compromises the result and repeats past results. I have failed miserably over and over. In fact, this reading about my failed presentation will be a complete failure. Initially, I thought that the presentation of this failure might uncover something about the ethics of appropriation, but now I doubt that very much. My guess is that this presentation will fail at doing any of that work in a serious way. I was planning to present a poorly made PowerPoint from my new book, Sprawl. This presentation would have included online images of shoppers in conjunction with my reading a text appropriated from online shopping reviews. But I failed to produce this PowerPoint. And even if I had gotten it together, the digital images would have failed to say anything useful about the very consumerism it points to. So, you're not seeing anything now. Not only have I failed to produce this visual component, but also the text of Sprawl itself is a complete waste, a total failure by even my own generous standards. Personally, I locate this failure in the condescending attitude toward the online authors. As a corrective to this problem, I considered writing about the ethics of appropriation in the parking garage section of Sprawl, because while parking, we do ask ourselves a lot of questions. But all of that explaining was one big failure, which failed to bring home any of the complexities that sympathetic practitioners also face in their own practices to appropriate and document contemporary culture. Some have argued that this so-called ethical issue is a non-issue, and that I fail to grasp the dimension of this no-win situation, or that I fail to recognize the blatant fact that appropriation is ubiquitous in all aspects of contemporary culture. But I failed to counter that claim with a sufficient rebuttal, and I failed to contextualize the opposite argument. When I realized the dead-endedness of this failure, I thought the best way to rectify the dilemma would be to go online and join a shopping chat room myself. In this way, my aim was to encourage a dialogue, even as I was making an intervention. What a waste! The idea was terrible, doomed to fail from the start. The result was an awkwardly transparent failure. Here's what I posted. GNC. Most of us are trying to get the best out of our bodies every day through work and play. Mine is mainly through work. Getting older, my body tires faster and my joints and muscles take longer to recuperate. And here's the first response to my post. Dear Iggy Z, what the fuck? Is there something way wrong with your word processing program? Or is this some kind of poem? Which would be cool. Either way, GNC sucks. Don't trust anybody who works there. Dan the man. Dan the man seems to sniff me out as a poser or a loser or both. My strategy to appropriate identities here is way off the mark, fundamentally failed thinking. The act of borrowing online identities is more like identity theft than an orchestration of subjectivities. I have failed to answer any of these ethical questions that had troubled me. I am a failed avatar just waiting for the delete key. What then? I tried to consider how I might borrow this consumer language without having a superior relationship to it. The dilemma here comes to a head when deciding whether or not to correct the grammar and spelling of online found text. If I leave in the original errors, I take the risk of poking fun of the online authors who might be less privileged in education. If I do correct the errors, then I run the risk of controlling and purifying the found text. Either way points to failure, major failure, capital F. In terms of conceptualism, where the idea itself might have steered the text through these troubling waters, I have failed by my own editorial hand, fixing and doubting and reshaping the text instead of letting it perform its conceptual duty towards the larger idea. And as a crafted poem, this text is an obvious failure in that the materiality of language is not at all carefully considered. Where's the rhythm, assonance, consonance, dissonance, etc.? And what about that failed visual aspect, that PowerPoint we keep hearing about but don't see? Those pixelated images of shoppers with a crappy beige border and frilly cursive heading. Do we learn anything about the argument against craft, against a well-made object? Not here, we don't. And what about the ethics of appropriation? Please. Let's not forget, too, the ways in which this text, the one that I'm reading right now, has failed independently of the failed text it refers to. What we are left with then is a sort of triple failure, a weak presentation about a failed presentation of a failed text, with the hope, I guess, that such a discussion might bear fruit. But don't count on it. This is what complete and utter failure looks like. I have not entertained. I have not changed your mind. I have not influenced your thinking. I have not influenced poetry. I certainly have not influenced the world at large. I have failed miserably, thoroughly, and absolutely. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rob. Thank you, Matve. And thank you all for coming. It's a terrific way to conclude. And I'm sure they'll be going out afterwards. So please ask around if you want to know where we're headed. I don't know yet. And have a good night.